Welcome to A Cult of Personality, Esoteric Podcast Extraordinaire. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky, and you can find our website at occultofpersonality.net, featuring an extensive archive of recorded interviews. This is episode number 157, featuring an interview with literary journalist and novelist C.M. Mayo, author of Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, Francisco I. Madero and his secret book, Spiritist Manual. The Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the Occult of Personality membership section. This episode is also made possible by an additional donation from Steve in the UK and from Max, who donates every month via the Occult of Personality Patreon campaign available at patreon.com/occultofpersonality. Thanks again, and remember, your financial support keeps this podcast going. A Cult of Personality podcast is also sponsored by Miskatonic Books, an online store that focuses on the esoteric, occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, witchcraft, the Golden Dawn, as well as dark fantasy, classic horror, and supernatural fiction. They carry books by all your favorite esoteric publishers as well. Just visit miskatonicbooks.com. The Hermetic Arts Learning Center, located in historic Salem, Massachusetts, offers unique instruction in the arcane arts from some of the most experienced and talented teachers around. The Hermetic Arts Learning Center is committed to the authentic Western esoteric tradition by providing students with quality, in-depth classes along with all the books and ritual tools one could ever want, many of them handcrafted. The ancient mysteries have a new home in the Witch City. Stop by the shop or visit online at hermeticarts.com. Now, in episode number 157, an interview with author and podcaster C.M. Mayo. You can find her website at cmmayo.com. An El Paso, Texas native, raised in Northern California, educated at the University of Chicago, C.M. Mayo is an award-winning literary journalist, novelist, poet, and translator who has been living in and writing about Mexico for over 25 years. She is also host of the long-standing lit blog Madam Mayo and the Marfa Mondays podcasting project. Her most recent book, A Paradigm Exploding and Profoundly Researched Examination of the Esoteric Philosophy of the Leader of Mexico's 1910 Revolution, is Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, Francisco I. Madero and his secret book, Spiritist Manual. In 2015, it won the National Indie Excellence Award for History. Please check the show notes on the occultofpersonality.net website for links to C.M. Mayo's website, links to the book, as well as information about her other excellent work. I found C.M. Mayo's book to be very engaging and well-written. This is not your typical history, nor even esoteric history book. Mayo is a profoundly creative and insightful artist who is able to bring her own perspective into the frame while enhancing our understanding of her subjects. This is a masterful introduction to a subject that hasn't been explored in this accessible way before and probably never will be again. If you enjoy esotericism, history, politics, and the way that they sometimes intersect, I highly recommend you read C.M. Mayo's Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution.
C.M. Mayo, I want to welcome you to a Cult of Personality podcast, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I'm honored and delighted.
Well, thank you. So we're going to discuss primarily your book, Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, Francisco Madero and his secret book, Spiritist Manual, which I think is really an extraordinary book, both yours and his. But before we talk about that, if you could just tell people a little bit about yourself and maybe some of the other things that you've written.
I'm an American, born in Texas, educated in Chicago, raised in California. But I've been living in Mexico on and off for more than 25 years. So naturally, most of my books have something to do with Mexico. And in particular, I've always in all my works been very interested in looking at Mexico with the filters off. In other words, not necessarily buying the version of, you know, what is Mexico and who are the Mexicans according to the textbooks, or, you know, what the tourist industry wants to promote or the Mexican government wants to promote, but, you know, what I actually see with my own eyes. And as far as my work goes, which brings me to the Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, I've written both fiction and nonfiction, and I kind of alternate between the two of them. I have several books. Rather than go on about them, I'll just invite listeners to look at my website, sammayo.com, and they can see all my books. But the one that I had just finished when I started this one that we're going to talk about was a novel based on a true story that was really a strange story. I spent many years digging things out of the archives in order to make sense of it. It's called The Last Prince of the Mexican Empire, and it's about Agustin de Iturbide y Green, who was half American, and his mother was American from Washington, and his father was the son of Mexico's first emperor, and he was, we don't really have the right word, so we'll say adopted, but it's not really adopted in the sense that we would understand that term. But he was adopted by Maximilian von Habsburg, who at that time was the emperor of Mexico. This is in the 1860s. And for, I would say, the year that Maximilian von Habsburg really reigned with believability at the time, the heir presumptive was this child, Agustin de Iturbide y Green. So I had just finished that book, and I really enjoy looking at archives. And of course, I'd been thinking, you know, to make sense out of that particular story, I'd had to think a lot about Mexican history and Mexican politics and so on and so forth. And so that was what brought me into this story with Madero. I happened to make a long story short, I happened to have a chance to be in the Francisco Madero Archive, which is in Mexico City in the National Palace, and came across the Manual Espirita, which is by Bhima. That's spelled B-H-I-M-A. And I asked the curator, what's this? And she said, well, Bhima was the pen name of Francisco Madero. And I just about, you know, fell off my horse there, because for people who don't know Mexican history, let me just tell you, Francisco Madero is like Abraham Lincoln. He's a huge figure. He's considered the apostle of democracy in Mexico. He led the 1910 revolution. Most people outside of Mexico have heard of figures like Emiliano Zapata and Pancho Villa, but the leader of the 1910 revolution was Madero, and he was president of Mexico. He's just an enormously important and revered figure in Mexico. So for him to have written a book that people don't talk about, doesn't matter what's in the book, it's important. But it turns out that what's in the book was quite interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating material. And I'm just wondering if you could say a few words about maybe why it's so taboo. Obviously, there's the normal feelings about this type of material, but it seems like people did have an inkling that he was into this stuff, even though it's not much talked about.
Well, you know, I'm especially happy to do this podcast interview with you because most people don't know anything about metaphysical history or metaphysics or anything esoteric. And their attitude, as I'm sure all the listeners know, you know, you have to deal with most people in the world whose attitude is one of just hostility, or they think it's ridiculous. They think it's pathetic. In Mexico, they use the words like supersticiones or este primitivo, you know, like it's just beneath their notice. And so, of course, if you have that attitude, it's very inconvenient to recognize that a national hero was not only a spiritist, but he was a medium, and he was a leading spiritist, and he was apparently a very accomplished medium. So people just kind of don't want to talk about it. Of course, there were rumors. During his campaigns and during his presidency, there were a lot of cartoons that showed him as a medium. But most people, I think, just took that as, well, they either believed it and thought he was horrible and were glad to see him overthrown. But I think a lot of people just thought it was the usual lucha libre in Mexican politics. You know, you just throw all sorts of crazy stuff at people you don't like, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. So I think a lot of people just dismissed it or didn't really believe it. They didn't take it seriously. Or even if they did, as I say, it made them very uncomfortable. I should hasten to mention, though, that I'm not the first person to write about this. I'm the first person to translate the book. And I'm the first person to write a book about the book. But there are some very important Mexican historians who have written about Maduro's spiritism. And I can count them on one hand, those who've gone into any depth or seriousness on the subject. But I'm not the first. So I built on their work.
But you may be the first to have done so with such extensive background research on the subject.
Well, actually, no. I think probably, briefly, there, Enrique Krause, who's a very well-known Mexican historian, he occasionally writes op-eds for the New York Times. He wrote a book in the late 1980s called Madero Místico de la Libertad, Mystic of Liberty. And that really was the first serious, respected, and also popular Mexican historian to bring forth the fact that, yeah, he was a medium. We have his mediumistic notebooks. You know, we know that he believed he was a writing channel, and he launched, well, there's a lot to say about that, and he said it. But then there's an academic, a professor named Yolia Tortolero, who did a very, very good book called El Espiritismo Seduce a Francisco Madero. Spiritism Seduces Francisco Madero. And that came out about 10 years ago. So it's an excellent, profoundly researched book. It's available on Kindle. Until it came out on Kindle, it was very difficult to find. That book helped me enormously. And there's a couple of other people. Novelist Ignacio Solares is important to mention. And Manuel Guerra de Luna and Alejandro Rosas, who are two Mexican historians who did Manuel wrote the screenplay, and both of them appear in the documentary called 1910, La Revolución Espírita, which is outstanding. It's available on Vimeo. You can watch it for free, so go check that out. Really good documentary. I based my research on those works and my own reading and my own research. I had the privilege of being able to go through Madero's personal library, and I think another thing that I brought to it, there's a lot to say about his library that I think some of your listeners might find very interesting, but I was able to bring forth, I think, more of the connection with the United States that I think a lot of Mexican historians have glossed over a little bit too quickly, in my opinion. And finally, another thing I brought to it, I think, was my understanding of Mexican politics that I brought from my previous works. I think that shed a lot of light on it. and Maestro Wiracocha, Dr. Crum Heller. I think that I was able to say some very interesting and important things to connect all of that. So I think I was able to add quite a bit, but I'm not the first to write about it.
Well, yeah, I think you deserve a lot of credit, though. I mean, especially having, well, let me just say this. The book, you have, it's in two parts, really. The first part is sort of the background where we kind of accompany you along your journey to research and eventually translate this work. And then the second section, which is the actual translation of it, it's really remarkable because I felt like as a reader that I got to kind of like accompany you along the path, you know, sitting in these archives, you know, looking over these books, you know, the surprise that registered, you know, when you realized what you were holding in your hands and how strange that it really was and all of that. I think a really interesting way of approaching this material.
Well, it's three odysseys. That's why the title is Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution. One odyssey is Madero's odyssey, his journey into martyrdom. It's also my journey. It's a personal essay. And then finally, it's for the reader. And I know that the book, it hasn't been out that long, but it's been long enough that I'm kind of getting a sense of who my readers are. And people who know something about metaphysical history tend to, you know, grab up the book pretty quickly. I've had a good response from those people. But the book is really written for people who don't know anything about metaphysics. And they may be, let's say, historians of the revolution, people who teach Mexican history, and they just probably couldn't even tell you what Spiritism is. They wouldn't know who Madame Blavatsky is, to give you an idea. Even though they might be beautifully educated people, they have that big gap that they don't, you know, those authors, they don't know who they are. They don't know what the traditions are. Because as I say, you know, the attitude of most educated people in Western culture is, this is beneath my notice. So they don't know anything about it.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do is not necessarily convince people, oh, Madero was right about everything, you must be a spiritist, you know, but rather to provide context to say, well, yeah, he really was a spiritist, but what does that actually mean? And what is the rich esoteric matrix from which he got his ideas? And what is the context for that? And as I know, the people listening, probably all of you know, there is this huge literature, there is this huge tradition, but again, most people are not aware of it.
No, and it is certainly extensive enough and complex enough with various different philosophies and schools and figures that it can be daunting, I think.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I was daunted.
Yeah, and I kind of got that from the book, but I felt like the way that you went through the material, it wasn't just a superficial summary. It seems like you actually tried to approach it without prejudice and understand a little bit of the background to not only understand Madero and his ideas, but to understand where those ideas came from.
Exactly.
And how people, you know, approach them, you know, without the prejudice. You know, obviously some people are true believers right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to have that approach to it and not being familiar with it is a real gift. And it was a pleasure to kind of go through that journey with you a little bit in the book.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know, one of the things that I got from writing the novel that I did before this one. That was about, a period when Mexico was in civil war and there was a monarchy. So we had people who really believed in the monarchy. And we had people who really believed that that was bad and Mexico should be a republic. And so as a novelist, to try to understand my characters, that was really a great exercise for coming into this. You know, to try to say, well, why would somebody believe this? Why would somebody do this? Rather than just judge them, you know, and just kind of toss them out the window. I said, well, why would they believe this? And to me, actually, one of the things that I really got out of this, for anyone who's familiar with Mexican history, one of the great mysteries of the Mexican Revolution is why U.S. Ambassador Wilson was so hostile to Madero. He was terribly hostile. He's one of the great villains of 20th century Mexican history. And why? And I think if you understand the context of Spiritism in the Western world at that time, at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, there were many true believers. It was an important movement. But there were also many people, and Ambassador Wilson was one of them, who believed that believing in Spiritism, believing that you can communicate in any way, shape, or form with invisible beings is mental illness, period. There's nothing more to say. You're just crazy. And so he believed that. He believed Maduro was crazy. And that explains his hostility. It explains it. So I'm not saying he's right. I think he was a terrible ambassador. But it makes it understandable. It's no longer such a mystery. And that's just one of many examples I could give.
Mm. Yeah. I'm curious. You kind of touched on this already, but what, in your mind, are the big implications of the leader of the revolution being not just familiar with this material, but a medium himself, writing a secret manual of Spiritism? I mean, this is, to me, I feel like this is a huge revelation, and I feel like the implications of someone who is this affected by these ideas and practices to be at the forefront and the center of a revolutionary movement is, well, I mean, you could probably spend a lifetime, you know, talking about it and studying it, but what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it explains so much. I think that when you look at the Maduro family at that time, it's very difficult to make a good argument that they had a reason to launch a revolution. Some historians have tried to do that without reference to the Spiritism, but I just don't think it makes sense. The grandfather of Maduro was Evaristo Madero, who was like the equivalent of the Rockefellers. These were some of the richest people in Mexico at the time. They had all sorts of businesses, from cotton trading to ranching to winemaking. They had banks. They had glass factories. I mean, you name it, they had it. They were very, very wealthy people with multiple businesses. So Madero's grandfather, Evaristo, of course, to make his businesses work, was very close with the government at that time, and his go-to guy was the Minister of Finance, which was a very important figure of the time. And Evaristo Madero was dead set against this political activity of his nephew. He was absolutely appalled by it and tried to stop it. And although it's true that some of the members of the family got on board, and in particular, the younger brother, Gustavo Madero, but I would say the family was very divided. It wasn't like they all woke up one day and said, oh, let's have a revolution because Porfirio Diaz is a bad guy. You know, he was kind of like the equivalent of Hosni Mubarak. You know, he just had been ruling with all these cronies for all these years. And then the question of transition came up, and obviously it wasn't going to be sustainable. So who was going to challenge this? And when you look at people like Zapata or or Pancho Villa. They have certainly a lot of reasons why people hold them up as heroes, but these were not people who were going to put on a suit and tie and have an agent in Washington and sit down and deal with questions of national financing. Madero was. He was a person who had administrative experience and capacity, managerial capacity, social stature. So the question is, why would a person like that risk everything? And I think that once you understand his religious beliefs, which are spiritism, coupled with his reading of the Bhagavad Gita, that starts explaining things.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to me, the way that these spiritual beliefs, these philosophies can have such an impact on an individual, and that individual can then have such an impact on society. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of other esoteric philosophies that, you know, inspired revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we could probably go through the list. you know, some of the obvious ones that stand out, in addition to this example, which I, you know, recently became aware of through your book, I think you could probably classify the American Revolution in there to some extent.
Yes.
The French Revolution.
Yes.
And recently others as well, the Iranian Revolution. And I'm sure there's others that are probably more glaring examples that are slipping my mind at the moment. But the fact that these ideas, I guess another one you could probably throw in there would be the Theosophists in India. Mm-hmm. and the way that sort of revitalizing the Vedic religion had and their influence on Gandhi had in sort of the end of colonization.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I understand was that Gandhi got his enthusiasm for the Bhagavad Gita through the Theosophists. And one of the things I found in Maduro's personal library was many works about the Bhagavad Gita, including one that he had. In fact, it was the only book that I found in his library that he had annotated in pencil extensively. He was planning to do a book about the Bhagavad Gita. And he had many works by Annie Besant. And he was very much into the Bhagavad Gita. So that was a reading of a text. So again, Maduro was not a Theosophist. And my understanding is that neither was Gandhi, but they were very influenced by these ideas that were brought by the Theosophists. And they were interacting with Theosophists.
Right, yeah. So I'm curious, this may be sort of beyond the scope of what you want to talk about, but I'm curious how going on this journey, learning about Madero and his beliefs and his impact, has that had any effect on your own ideas about spiritism or any esoteric thoughts or philosophies?
Well, yeah, I crunched through a lot of literature in trying to get my mind around this. And because my book is directed at people who may not have any background in metaphysics, I don't really talk much about my own thoughts or experience with that. But I can tell you that for many years, I've read extensively about metaphysics and so on and so forth. But it was always in a very sort of haphazard, maybe intuitive way, not in a systematic way. And so when I encountered his ideas, I really am telling the truth to say that when I started translating the Spiritus Manual, I realized, well, I can translate it, but I don't understand what I'm translating. These ideas are just very foreign to me. So at that point, I did do a lot more I would say more grounded kind of reading, history of metaphysics. I was looking at a lot of the academic works on the history of metaphysics and so on and so forth. I mean, they're all in the bibliography in there. But I had done a lot. So I'm probably more open-minded to a lot of the ideas than I would expect my readers to be, let me put it that way. My dad's family's Irish, with a lot of very typically Irish clairvoyance and telepathy. And my grandfather and my dad, you know, they have Uri Geller stories and so on and so forth. As a fiction writer, I am always looking for ways to try to understand other people. And so when I was towards the end of finishing my novel, The Last Prince of the Mexican Empire, I spent a lot of time trying to understand the aura and the different energetic bodies. So I did a lot of reading about that, which I don't talk about in this Metaphysical Odyssey book. But I really had read a lot about that. And I must say, as a fiction writer, I found it very useful. I think it's a very good question to say, well, if your character is this way, what would her throat chakra look like, or what would her heart chakra look like? And that may not end up in the novel, but it's very informative exercise to try to understand another person. So I had that background. So, you know, then when I started doing more reading and I came across the library that Madero had, or the remains of his personal library, I think most of it was new to me, but I think I was able, because of this background I have, to make sense of it more quickly and perhaps with more respect than possibly most other writers or historians would have, is my guess. But I don't know. There's not really any point in comparing myself. I do want to go back and underline that the works that I mentioned previously, particularly that by Yolia Tortolero and Manuel Guerra, I have enormous respect for, and they were very helpful to me.
That's excellent. Now, one of the figures you mentioned who was very close to Madero is a name that some of our listeners may have heard or read previously. That's Dr.
Graham Heller. Yes, and as a matter of fact, I would love to hear from any listeners who know more about him, because I did my best to research him, but it was difficult. I ended up buying some of his notes. Well, let me go back to the beginning. That's for those who don't know who Dr. Graham Heller is. What opened the door for me on Dr. Graham Heller was a book by a German historian named Heribert von Feilich that just came out in 2012. And it's called In Plain Sight, Felix A. Sommerfeld, Spymaster in Mexico, 1908 to 1914. Those who have written about the Mexican Revolution always end up getting into the question of what were the Germans up to? There was a lot going on because this was coinciding with World War I. And there's just a whole lot to say about it. But suffice it to say that this guy, Heribert von Feilich, he reads German. He is German, but he also reads in Spanish and English. So he was able to go into the National Archives, where they had captured all these German intelligence documents back during this period. And he plowed through it and put together the story of Felix Sommerfeld. And I won't go into that in detail, but suffice it to say that Felix Sommerfeld has long been a mystery to people writing the history of the Mexican Revolution. It turns out that Felix Sommerfeld was very close to Madero and his brother Gustavo, and he was a spy. Felix Sommerfeld was a German spy. And to give you another idea of how close he was the main bodyguard of the First Lady, of Sara Perez de Madero. So they were very, very close. What does that mean? Well, I go into that in my book. But the point of this is that one of the Germans very close to Felix Sommerfeld, also a German spy, was Dr. Krumm Heller. And it turns out that he was not only Madero's personal doctor, but he was a fellow Spiritist, and he was a fellow Rosicrucian, and he was a fellow Mason, and so on and so forth. So that just kind of it is mentioned by one other Mexican historian. I'm not the first to bring it up, but I was able to say, whoa, what is that? You know, it's like, that's a football. I'm going to take it and run with it, right? So I start finding, well, what has Dr. Graham Heller written? And, well, many listeners know that he was a very important author at the beginning of the 20th century, publishing in both German and in Spanish. So I went on to abebooks.com and started buying up first editions of some of his books, which I got for a song because, you know, people in Mexico don't have any concept of his historical importance in terms of, well, anyway, the other thing that's really interesting about Krumheller is that he, being so close to Madero and then living beyond Madero, Madero was murdered when he was overthrown in 1913, but Krumheller went on to have a very interesting career, and he died after World War II in Germany, but he actually went on, and if I'm remembering correctly, he was the head of artillery for Obregón. I mean, he had a lot to do with different episodes of the Mexican Revolution, which is just not very convenient for Mexican historians sometimes to point out. But there you have it. And some of the books that he has, I actually pulled them out to have them handy while we're talking. They're really quite interesting. I talk about them in my book, but one of them that I have here is the Tratado de Quirología Médica. So it's looking at people's hands, reading palms for health. My favorite is the Tatuámetro, or Las Vibraciones del Éter, the Tatuámetro, or the Vibrations of the Ether. And there's one that I didn't put on my website because I think it would be very easy to have it be misinterpreted. This book is called, let me see, I'm going to bring it up here. It's called Für Freiheit und Recht, for freedom and, I forget, what does that mean? It's his memoir of being in Mexico during the revolution. And it has a chapter about Francisco Madero. And it's a really interesting book. I have a beautiful, pristine copy. It was published in Berlin, I think 1917. But it's full of swastikas. Now, of course, at that time, the swastika did not mean what it means to us today. I mean, we all see a swastika and we think Nazi. But at that time, it had different meanings. And I think he just meant, like, well, let's be a little esoteric, good luck, good health, you know, all good things. I think that's all he really meant by it. So, you know, to put Francisco Madero with the swastika on there, I think it's interesting to see it, but I just don't think most people would understand what was really meant by that.
But, yeah, without the context, it's pretty difficult to understand it, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, there's more to say about Dr. Krumheller, and I'm sure many of the listeners will know more than I do. So I hope people will write to me and tell me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is everything you had brought up in the book to that point was, to me, a revelation and fascinating material. But then to find out that Dr. Krumheller was his, like, personal physician and very close to him, I found that super shocking because Krumheller is at, like, the nexus of the entire occult revival movement, along with Papu or Pappas, Franz Hartmann.
He was a student of Pappas.
Yeah.
Before he came to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Theodore Royce, he was connected with Aleister Crowley, Harvey Spencer Lewis from Amorc, R. Swinburne Clymer from the Pennsylvania Neo-Rosicrucian group, and P.B. Randolph, who was the, you know, quote-unquote original Rosicrucian, or Neo-Rosicrucian anyway. So to be indirectly connected to this worldwide sort of occult revival movement and at the highest levels is really interesting because,
really,
again,
yes,
you have the guy who's the leader of the Mexican Revolution, like, one step away from all of these people I just named. Just ridiculous.
It's amazing. And Krumheller himself, I found a little book in a Mexican bookstore that's very scarce. It's called Trilogía Heroica, or the Heroic Trilogy, a condensed history of the last movement for freedom in Mexico. And it has the chapter that Krumheller wrote about Madero. and I'm in process of translating that. But one of the things is that here we have, in Krumheller's own words, that Madera was a very accomplished person. We have that in Krumheller's words. And I can also tell you from looking at his library, at Madera's library, the books in there were not the books of a dabbler. They were not the books of your average person. There were many books in French, from France. There were a lot of books from Barcelona, and there were a lot of books in English. And I found the book by Krumheller, Maestro Wiracocha, signed to his Rosicrucian brother, Madero. It's right there.
Yeah. This is really, really fascinating.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. And you had a little paragraph in your book. I just wanted to read this because it kind of touches on what we're talking about here. And you wrote that what we call history is but a nano slice of an intricate complexity. Mm-hmm. All of us, however tenuously, are connected to everyone else, every humble person, every famous and rich and powerful person, every criminal, every saint. And each incident in each life enfolds layer upon layer of meaning and mystery, each diffusing through the realms of time itself.
Yep.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. I believe that.
Yeah, and your story illustrates it so well, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really amazing to me.
I hope so.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about, well, how do I put this? Many of the people that Madero was influenced by in terms of his metaphysical ideas, and certainly his friends, certainly Dr. Krumheller and all the people he associated with, generally subscribe to an idea that they are operating in service to a, you could say, higher authority, but they often use terms like secret chiefs or the third order or, the invisible superiors or something along those lines. And I'm just wondering if Madero was open about that at all, or maybe he had different ideas.
Well, I think there's still many aspects that I don't know and maybe I won't ever know. But I think the most relevant thing to mention is that we know that when Madero came back from France, he was a student in France. He went to high school and he went to business school there. And he also spent a little bit of time in Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, studying agriculture and English and so on. We know that when he came back to his hometown in Coahuila, which is in the north of Mexico, that he joined a Spiritist circle. And we know that Spiritism had already arrived. The works of Allan Kardec, the main works of Spiritism had been translated. They were circulating. And just as north of the border in the U.S. and in Canada and England and parts of Europe, people were getting together in circles to have seances and to develop their mediumistic abilities. So we know that that's the case. And we also know they are preserved in the archives that he had mediumistic notebooks. In other words, he believed that he was able to channel messages from the spirits through writing. And what we know from those, they're in the archive, but they've also been transcribed, and they are in a collection in 10 volumes called Obras Completas de Francisco I. Madero, The Complete Works of Francisco Madero. And that came out in 2000. It's edited by Alejandro Rosas, who I mentioned before as one of the historians in the documentary 1910, La Revolución Espírita. He and Manuel Guerra are very knowledgeable on this subject. So anyway, we have the text of the mediumistic notebooks. And so we know, and it has appeared in print before, that Madero would sit down when he had decided to launch his political career. He would channel instructions and encouragement from various spirits, but when it came to politics, it was mainly one called Jose. So the question is, who was Jose? A lot of people want to jump to different conclusions that it was this historical figure or that one. But I would say we really don't know who Jose was. But there you have it. So he would channel these messages from Jose. And one of the things that he did, which was, and we have to understand the Spiritist manual in this context. I think this is just the most amazing thing. What Madeira did, channeling these instructions and encouragements, was he saw that the 1910 election was coming up, and the president, Porfirio Diaz, was up for a seventh term, okay? So this guy was like the Hosni Mubarak, right? I mean, he was just there forever, surrounded by cronies. He was, you know, 80 years old. It was like, we knew, you know, they knew he had to go. So who was going to challenge him? Who was going to come forth and be? So what Maduro did, according to these mediumistic cuadernos, was that he would sit down and every morning work on a book. And this book was La Sucesión Presidencial en 1910, the presidential succession in 1910. And so what he was doing was putting forward his platform, his political platform. Why should we have elections? Why should they be free? Why should they be fair? And who should win? And what should Mexico look like? And he was basically making an argument for, you know, free and fair democratic elections. This was his platform. He used this book to construct a political party. And he used that as his platform as a presidential candidate. He ran for president, and of course the reaction of the regime was to just toss him in jail and ignore the election altogether. Well, they had an election, but it was like just a stuffed ballot kind of thing with the main opposition candidate, Madero, in jail. And then Madero escaped. He went to Texas, and then he proclaimed the revolution November 20th, 1910, which is celebrated in Mexico practically like Christmas. It's a big day in Mexico, November 20th, 1910. This is just a huge, huge thing in Mexico. But anyway, then he launched the revolution. He won the revolution, at least that first step of it. And then he ran for president all over again, won, and took office. But he didn't last long. So anyway, what I'm saying is that we have the evidence of the mediumistic notebooks. And at the end of writing the Sucesión Presidencial en 1910, the book that was his presidential platform, the spirits told him, you are now going to write the Manual Espírita. You're going to write the Spiritist Manual. And he did. He finished it when he was in jail. I mean, this is huge. I mean, that he wrote this book in 1910. He wrote the Spiritist Manual in 1910, the year of the revolution. I mean, this is just mind-boggling. And it's also mind-boggling for me as a writer, because I don't know how he could be that productive. I mean, I just don't write that fast, you know? So he had the book printed, his second book, the Spiritist Manual. He had it printed and brought it out under this name, Bhima, and started circulating it in the same way that he circulated the Sucesión Presidencial. And one thing that Manuel Guerra makes this point very eloquently, and so I second Manuel Guerra in pointing out that this is a very important point, that the way that he organized his political campaigns and the revolution itself is the same way the Spiritists organized. They put together circles. They had a publication, maybe it was a magazine or a book like Allan Kardec's books or various magazines like La Cruz Astral or Revue Spirit or something like that. And the publication would kind of, you know, be like a glue to hold them together. And then they would have a Congress, just like a political party would have, you know, its big convention. Same exact structure. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
It really is.
Now, do you have any, I mean, if you could cast your mind into the future, do you have any predictions or maybe what you would like to see happen in terms of these ideas being more widely known and widely accepted, because I would think that someone of his stature being subscribing to these beliefs and then being so central to such a fundamental moment in history, that it might cause people to re-examine their preconceptions about these things, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think some people are ready to hear new things and some people aren't. I think, you know, where I come from as a writer, I mean, what I'm all about as a writer, whether I'm writing fiction or nonfiction, is exploring what does it mean to be human. That's really what I'm about. And one of the things I love about writing fiction is that that's your license to stand in someone else's shoes. You know, imagine what it's like to be a man or a monarchist or somebody who's really angry or someone who's really depressed or someone who believes this or believes that. You know, you can stretch yourself and have that kind of thought experiment of being another person, which is, and you can also have that as a reader if the novel is vivid and convincing enough. I mean, that's one of the joys of reading. And to an extent, that's also possible with nonfiction. So for me, it's really, you know, where I'm coming from as a writer and why I write the books I write and what I hope I achieve with my readers isn't so much to, you know, make the world be this way or that way or move large masses of people one way or the other. I mean, I've kind of realized a long time ago that I don't think my writing has mass appeal. I don't write that kind of book. But I think that what I'm able to do or what I try to do is invite people to explore what it's like to be somebody else, and that expands our ability to feel compassion for other people. And I think that expands us as people. And I think I don't know that we actually get anywhere with that, but we just kind of grow. I mean, I know I'm a much better person for having written the novel that I wrote, because I had to take so many people, the characters of that time, that I would have dismissed. I would have judged them as ridiculous or snobby, and I had to go into their point of view in the novel to try to understand, well, why did they think that? Why did they do that? And they had a reason. What was it? That doesn't mean they're right, but I can at least have compassion to get to a point of understanding. And for me, that's really what it's about. I can't really control who reads my books. I do my best to get them out there, but you know, at some point it's not in my hands.
Yeah, and at some level, I think it's also not necessarily confined to your book or who reads it, but the ideas kind of filter their way into a more collective type of consciousness, I think. And but one of the things that I guess is actually, to me personally, more important is that these metaphysical philosophies and ideas inspire people so much that they want to change things. They want to, and I think it may stem from the sort of utopianism that I find in much of the metaphysical literature, where this idea that, you know, heaven is all around us if we can only realize it, that we are more powerful than we realize. That we can change the world, you know, once we address the imbalances within ourselves and these things. And I find there's a slight utopianism that kind of stems from that often extends outward into other realms like the political. And that's not to say that I'm not trying to judge whether that's good or bad or whatever. I just have noticed that tends to be the case. And it makes sense that ideas that have this sort of utopian facet to them would play out that way, I think.
Well, I think that was definitely the case of Madero. I think that he believed that he was going to change Mexico. He did change Mexico. There's no question in my mind that if he had not come in, if he had not launched himself as a serious candidate and had the courage to launch the revolution and follow through with that, I don't think Mexico, even, you know, it's not to say Mexico's perfect, Mexico has its problems, but I think Mexico would have been a much more, I think it would have had more problems. I think that he did hold up a standard that every government, if imperfectly, has aspired to. And that's an important thing to say. So he did manage to make that one individual did manage to do an amazing thing. He really did. That said, I think that, you know, we can see in his history that he very much underestimated his opposition. And I had mentioned before that one of the great villains of 20th century Mexican history is Ambassador Wilson, while the other one is General Victoriano Huerta, who was very close to Madero and turned on him. And most historians believe that he was the one who ordered Madero's murder. So, you know, Madero was naive and to some extent. Was he more naive than the alternatives? That's another argument. I have that with many Mexican historians, but
could you say a little more about that?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a division of how people look at Maduro in Mexico. He's held up as a great hero. They celebrated the bicentennial of Mexico's independence from Spain, 1820, and the revolution, 1910, as this huge national thing. And so, of course, the hero of 1910 is Maduro. But the other side of the coin is there are many people who will say, many historians or people who've read some history who will say, well, but he was naive and he was crazy. And my answer to that is, well, yes, he was naive, because if he weren't, he wouldn't have been betrayed by Huerta and been killed. But was he crazy? No, I don't think that his many other actions and correspondence show that. On the contrary, I think they show a very sane person who was very goal-oriented and very practical in many ways, which might sound shocking to some people, because like, well, how could he be practical? How could he be sane if he's a medium? But, well, I'm probably preaching to the choir here with your listeners, but, you know, but I think most people who have any experience with this know that you know, yes, crazy people might hear voices, but that doesn't mean that you're crazy. Just because you hear a voice doesn't mean you're crazy. You might actually be hearing from someone in the afterlife or an angel or an entity of some kind. I think we can accept that. The average person might not, but there you have it. But was he naive? I think we have to ask, well, what was the alternative? You know, I mean, I think the previous dictator was quite naive to think that he could just throw Maduro in jail and get reelected at the age of 80. And then General Huerta, who overthrew Maduro, he didn't last long. I mean, he was overthrown himself almost immediately. So who's naive, you know? I mean, so I think we have to understand that when you have a revolution, whoever takes power, and this is going to be true anywhere, whoever takes power is taking over the presidency as an institution when it's debilitated.
Sure.
I mean, it's debilitated because if it weren't, there wouldn't have been a revolution. And then the revolution made it more debilitated. And so then you come in and you sit in the presidential chair and it is difficult to rule. And you probably also don't have much in the way of tax collection either. And then you have people in the army who are kind of grumbling and kind of divided, and maybe they haven't been paid and so on and so forth. So I think it's too easy to see a weak government in that circumstance and say, oh, he's naive, he's weak. I think that's too easy. You have to see it in context. So that's my argument.
I like that argument.
Yeah, it's just common sense, I think. You know?
I think so. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm really honored and delighted that you read the book and wanted to talk to me about it. And I'm so happy to be able to discuss it with you for an audience that is not completely wigged out by esoteric stuff, as most people are, as most historians of Mexico are. So it's just a thrill for me.
Yeah, it's a thrill for me too. C.M. Mayo, and the book is Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution. I recommend it. If you like history and the influence of esoteric philosophy and ideas, this is right up your alley, and it's a really good read. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, C.M. Mayo and I continue the conversation about her wonderful book, Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, Madero's Spiritist Manual and its contents, and much, much more. We also touch upon current affairs in Mexico and perception versus reality. Don't miss that fascinating conversation. Just go to occultofpersonality.net/membership and sign up if you haven't already. It's the best way to support the podcast while receiving access to a tremendous amount of additional exclusive content. Thanks for listening, and until next time.
Spangled boots on, my head's hanging loose down this highway. Lord, I'm tired of bitching, hissing and spitting every goddamn day. And though I love you like water, I feel like I'm drowning if I stay. dress. Just hang on to a bus for your precious one. You can make up your dreams between your sweat and your